Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN SC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Ali Moreno. What a day right across the board. We'll kick things off in the Premier League at the Etihad. Manchester City taking on Aston Villa. They were 2-0 down with 74 minutes to go. Well, 74 minutes gone in the game, but incredible 5-minute spell saw them score 3 goals, bag 3 points and retain their title, beating Liverpool by 1 point over the season, meaning that Pep Guardiola now has won 4 Premier League titles. That's 4 of the last 5 campaigns, becoming the second most successful manager in Premier League history. Take a look at the back page of some of the papers. 5-minute miracle. Gundogan getting a brace in that spell. Rodri as well. Ike, kind of a bit like Aguero. The back page of Mirror. Meanwhile, drama kings with Fernandinho lifting the trophy. Let's welcome in, shall we? Frank, Luis and Jules. Jules, let's start with you. You were at the game. I can't imagine the roller coaster of emotions that are around you.
It was incredible, Dan. It was just going through all the emotions. As we said, some of us have been there before, but today there was something very special, because I think before, everybody seems quite comfortable in a sense. Yeah, they should do it. We rarely see this City team playing with pressure, under pressure, not with the fluidity that they usually have. And it happened today at the wrong time for 72 minutes, where they were really off. Caught everything. Even Kevin De Bruyne would miss some easy passes. Just the whole team was off. And you think, OK, maybe then when we thought they're going to do it and they were pretty safe doing it, then they struggled. And there was a time where the people all around me were like, this is not going to happen today. Liverpool, on the other hand, were not winning at that time, so there was maybe a little less pressure. But still, it was an incredible environment where people were like, stop breathing. It was just incredible. And then for those 5 minutes and 36 seconds, I think it was, all in all, the place just erupted. And I think you could have probably heard the Etihad from Anfield and Liverpool 50 miles down the road, because the noise was out of this world.
It's a great thing about sport, and of course we follow soccer here in general, Frank, in the sense that you couldn't have written this. That 5 minutes was just compulsive viewing. And just from a fan's point of view, even if you didn't have a horse in the race, it was something you remember, something that almost gave you goosebumps. It was that special.
It is, and it's why we love football, because we don't know what's gonna happen. It's why sometimes we get upset with you when you ask for some prediction. We would know something about that. We would be billionaires, but it's impossible to give anything, because everything can happen. As you said, you know, we had the Aguero last minute, first title for a long time for Manchester City. And then we have those 5 minutes. And we were following Liverpool, who scored a goal and couldn't get ahead of their opponents and Wolverhampton. And you were following that. Say, what's going to happen? The boss going to lose the game, and City's going to be the winner. And suddenly it got crazy. Aston Villa scored the second goal. So you say, OK, it's over. We just have to wait for Liverpool to score and to win the game and to be the champion. And suddenly you have something fantastic, because he's a master of that. Tactically, we have to congratulate and give credit to Guardiola, because the 2 changes that he made the difference, and the differences. And Gundogan scoring the 2 goals, it's absolutely the guy who changed everything today on the field.
Luis, what was it like watching all this unfold from a Liverpool perspective?
Not very nice, as you can imagine, of course. I was at home watching it with my kids, and we were hoping when we saw Liverpool losing in the beginning, we thought, yeah, it's still time to react. We saw on the other side that Aston Villa was doing the job. We thought, careful, because Manchester City, they always have the chance. And, well, the things were turning for both sides. We were expecting Man City to win this game. We were expecting Liverpool to win this game. That's where he ended. I think in the head of everybody in the Mersey was thinking about the Champions League final is going to be the most important. Even Jurgen Klopp was managing a little bit the tempo when they saw Thiago leaving the pitch. He was concerned, of course. He put Salah to give him a few minutes to see how he's feeling because of the Champions League. So I think everybody was expecting in Manchester City to win the trophy. But there was a few, let's say, minutes that we all thought, maybe, why not? What if? But no, at the end, Manchester City did what they have to do. They've been doing during the whole season, waiting until the last moment to make the changes. And I have to say that we normally, and I think the Fran just mentioned it very well, we think sometimes, and we talk about Pep Guardiola open thinking the things, but definitely is a master genius on tactics. And the three changes, I will say, Zinchenko, Sterling and Gundogan, were crucial, world key to make the comeback. And at the end, they got their win. And of course, they leave the trophy.
We're watching it together, obviously, Ali. And when Coutinho scored to make it 2-0, I was like, it's happening. It's happening. Uh-huh. It's going to happen. But there was just something so key about that first goal from Gundogan. It was almost getting the cork out of the champagne because you felt that that just gave a collective sigh of relief or just an injection of belief to City from then.
To jumpstart the team, because up until that point, they had been flat. So it was so very reminiscent of Manchester City against Real Madrid in Champions League, where for a long period of time, Manchester City were in control of the game. And something happened to Real Madrid late. You get that goal, and that gives you life. That was exactly the same sort of reaction that you saw from Manchester City. Now roles reverse, where they get one moment, one time. Raheem Sterling, float the ball, back post, there's a goal. And as soon as that ball is hitting the back of the net, we look at each other, the fans look at each other and say, wait a minute, it's not over. It's not over. The players know it. Manchester City players know it. And Aston Villa players know it as well. And now, Aston Villa, that has really nothing to play for, they're sort of hanging on. But in a way, it was almost unstoppable. Because once Manchester City generated that momentum, Aston Villa was just chasing shadows. And it was all about whether Manchester City could provide the quality, the final touch, the final pass. And it came from unlikely sources. The finish from Rodri, it is as controlled as it can be. Opens up his body and just finds that near post so cleanly. And you're thinking, my goodness, if somebody was going to score an important goal here, Rodri's the guy? Gundogan is the guy?
Yeah.
Yes. And it just talks about, and I think it showcases, the resources that this team has available. That they may not have a number 9, but they have options, personnel that is available that can make a difference in key moments. And they did so 5 minutes at a time.
Yeah.
But it's all it took. And they were special for those 5 minutes.
Frank, you must miss playing on these sort of occasions.
Excuse me?
You must miss what? Playing. You must, like, that moment is impossible, I imagine, to replicate anywhere.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Yeah, no, that's, as we all agreed, you know, what you can go through when you're on the field with those games and what you see is coming on. You want to be a player again. You want to be 25 and you want to run and feel what the guy felt. But, you know, I think Liverpool lost the mind game in fight, in a way that they would have scored a goal, they would have led their game. I think it would have put a pressure because everybody is connected. Everybody knows what's going on in the other field. We saw when Aston Villa scored, how Anfield reacted and fans getting crazy. I think Liverpool would have scored a goal, would have led the game. It would have been different for Manchester City because we all agreed that it's psychologically that you getting into pressure, and then suddenly you score a goal, then you score a second goal for Manchester City, and then you score the third one. But I think it could have been different. We'll never know, but it could have been different if Liverpool would have scored the first and lead their game.
Jules, what was it like? Because it's something unique about the final day, obviously. It's almost a Mexican wave of reactions as news is spread about what is going on elsewhere. Obviously, that Wolves goal to open the scoring, welcomed by so much support by the City fans. But when Liverpool equalise, there's almost that inevitability, I imagine, as a City supporter. You think, well, they're going to get more. They're going to win it. What was that moment like?
It was crazy because they started really, the atmosphere at the beginning was incredible. Everybody was singing. And then the more the game was unfolding, especially at the Etihad, but a lot of people had like the radio in the ear to know what was going on at Liverpool. Some would stop singing, biting their nails. I saw some people literally going down their seats, like literally lower and lower and lower the more minutes were happening because they were so scared. And then the first goal goes in, and then you start believing again, but you're still not sure because you're still 2-1 down and there's 15 minutes to go, but it's not that long. And then the second one, and I think the key moment is, like Ali said, the Rodri goal. And Rodri, by the way, is an unsung hero because he's been immense this season. We always talk about Kevin De Bruyne, and rightly so, and Phil Foden and their geniuses and all of that. But Rodri this season, with no cover because Fernandinho can't really play anymore at that kind of level, Rodri on his own to have been that important is incredible. But that second goal, after that second goal went in, you knew they were going to score the third one because Villa had switched off by now. And the crowd and the atmosphere and the roar within the Etihad, it felt like 100,000 people, and you knew it would not be long until the third would come, and it came straight away. But that the key one is the second goal, and how quick the second came after the first one. And like Pep said at the end, you know, he rang up Real Madrid. They gave him good advice how to score 3 goals in 5 minutes.
Well, exactly. But as Jules says, Rodri has been so important, Luis, to City this season. Are you surprised how much he has stepped up and kind of taken responsibility for this side?
Not surprised. We watch him every week here when he was at Atletico in Madrid, and definitely we knew that he was a fantastic player on the build. But when he arrived to Manchester City and we were surrounded by amazing players and also a manager who is giving them the confidence, he's becoming a leader on the middle of the field here. The team plays on his way. When he decided to speed up the game, he's going to put the ball from one side to the other side. If he needs to slow it down, he's going to make short passes. He's helping every single player on the field, and he's making even better the players that are around him. And of course, this season, I think he scored three goals. Last season, he scored 2. He's bringing something extra to his play. That even though he plays far away from the box, when he arrived in second line, he's so dangerous. He's got a fantastic stride. And he's using it today. Even had another chance. He received the ball with the chest, and volley was high over the goal. But he's giving that to this Manchester City. As it's very key to have a player who knows that he needs to keep the tempo. Use of his pace, use of his pass, quickly 1-2 pass every single time when he's playing against teams that they are always stuck at the back. It's very important that he makes those quicks. And well, I think he's unbelievable the whole season, and he just killed it in the last game, just scoring that goal as well.
Jules just mentioned fans in the stand getting lower and lower and lower in the seat. When Coutinho scored the goal, it wasn't just the fans getting lower in the seat. Guardiola was like this. I mean, he could not be any lower in the seat. They cut to Guardiola, and it's almost as if, like, I've run out of answers. I don't know what else to do. And think about the difference in rhetoric about Pep Guardiola if they're unable to make this comeback, right? Yep. The collapse late against Real Madrid, and a major collapse late in Premier League. And 5 minutes change it all. Because in 5 minutes, we've gone from this team collapsed twice when he counted the most to Pep Guardiola's back again, a genius. It's amazing how quickly this game takes us in all sorts of different directions. And that is exactly what this 5 minutes did. We went from Manchester City choking the league away, yep, just giving it up, losing it, throwing it up all over themselves, yeah? To look at the character, the heart, the genius that is Pep Guardiola. Never fight. You never give up the fight. You never give up. You have this sort of mentality and all these things, and they go on and win it. This game is crazy.
Yeah.
And it is indeed why we love it.
Yes.
But if you're in it,
yeah,
if you're Guardiola, if you're a Manchester City fan, if you're a Liverpool fan, for that matter, those 5 minutes had to be absolutely, completely crazy and something that you appreciate once you've gone through it, but you don't want to go through it again.
What were the players saying after the game, Jules?
I saw Riyad Mahrez, which I thought the interview was fascinating, and he was in a really good mood, and we know each other really well, but he said, imagine my season. With Algeria, we lost in the World Cup playoff. Well, they lost in AFCON, but in the World Cup playoff in the 124th minute against Cameroon. Then there's Madrid and the Bernabeu. And then today, he said, I thought I was going to die. I said, I thought I was going to die, that my season would be defined by losing in the last kick of extra time to go to the World Cup and not go to the World Cup in the semi-final of the Champions League in the last minute or the dying minutes against Real Madrid, and now again on the last day of the Premier League losing the title that way. And, but he said, you know, this team is crazy. This is a crazy team. He said, in the four titles that we won in the last 5 years, three of them were 90 points or above. 100 points, 98, and then 93 for this season. He said, this is unprecedented. This is incredible. And to do it against this incredible Liverpool team, to do it after all the disappointment of this season so far up to today, to do it after, you know, with all the pressure that was the first 72 minutes that we mentioned, where nothing was going their way, they were really, really poor, really terrible. He said it shows the character. And he said, which is the rhetoric that Guardiola has, it's harder to win the Premier League than the Champions League. Maybe they're right, it's certainly more games, but it was like, this is what we are. This is what Man City are all about. This is what we did today. This is what we are. We have so much character, so much talent, so much belief, that's how we turn this game around in that fashion. And it was incredible. I think even he could not really believe what happened. I think it would need a few more days for all those players to really let the whole thing sinking in, because it was all adrenaline and the stadium was still full and all of that. I think it would take them a few days to really realise what they achieved today.
It takes it. Actually, Luis, I wanted to talk to you about, I know it wasn't quite Istanbul, but when does it hit you? When does it suddenly kind of sink in? Because as Jules said, the City players just full of adrenaline. You go from one emotion where you're down, and then to all of a sudden, a five-minute spell. You, of course, have the second half and then penalties. Like, what is that like? How do you even sleep?
Yeah, exactly. It's a lot of it's a roller coaster of emotions. The moment you receive two goals, you think they're out of the game, but it's... And the guys just have been talking about, it's just one moment, 1 second. It could be a chance. It could be a corner that you feel the crowd, that you feel that you can do it. And suddenly you score that first goal. Everything starts from that first goal, because you create that momentum. And in the moment, you know the quality. Everybody knows the talent of this team. Everybody knows the ability to make comebacks, the quality of the players. Every single player on the pitch can make a difference in every single second, from set pieces, from a moment of a 1v1, from a shelter, from outside of the box. So at the end, there are so many options that you have to make a comeback, to create that momentum. And this Manchester City has been working during the whole game. The things were not on their way. But in that moment when they saw Gundogan scoring the first goal, that's it. That's all they needed to start going forward, to try to give a little bit of extra and the support that they knew, and they start pushing. In that momentum, it was about 5 minutes. It could have been about 10 minutes or about 3 minutes, but that momentum is what you need. And, well, Manchester City used it to make those three goals that they were what they needed to make this game one of the most probably important of their career, one of the most beautiful ones during the whole season. Mm. And unfortunately for the Red fans, not enough to get the trophy.
It's funny, isn't it? If City went out and won 5-0, mm-hmm. like it wouldn't quite be as dramatic, and I can't imagine it have the same sort of impact on the players. Frank, I know you hardly mentioned this, but looking at your Wikipedia, you won a World Cup
in
1998,
no way,
which
really?
I thought which was surprising.
Amazing.
Like, obviously, it's no World Cup, but still, from a player's perspective, it must be such a special feeling to be in part of such a special occasion.
Well, any game you play as a professional player, and it doesn't need to be a World Cup final or Champions League final. The game you play, and I remember playing a quarterfinal of the FA Cup against Liverpool and losing 2-0 and coming back within, like, I would say 20, 25 minutes, scoring four goals. And it happens against me, where you win, you think you're comfortable, you win 3-0 and you lose 4-3 and you don't realize what's going on. So it's just something you will always remember in your life. Especially when it goes on, it goes your way. But it's what you want. It's what we love in the game. It's why we want to be into that game, because we know that everything is possible. And you know, from France, we always say, you know, be careful when you play against an English club, because everything can happen until and before the last whistle. So it's part of the culture of English clubs to never give up before the last second of the game. And it's why we love the Premier League, because we know that even on the last day, even if everything is written that Manchester is going to win the Premier League and Liverpool is going to finish second, that something can happen. And it happened again this season with that last fantastic day and with a complete full of suspense where and you don't want to get out of your couch. You want to see all the games. You want to see what's going on. And I think even Salah, when he scored, I think he didn't know that City were leading. I don't know. He was very happy. Where no. I think he should not have been because it was for nothing. But we love that game for that. And I remember and we define people being good or coach being good because of maybe 5 minutes. I remember Guardiola at the press conference saying, you know what, when we play the Champions League against Paris Saint-Germain, in the wall opened and we scored a goal and we were qualified for the next round. It's because of me, because I'm a great coach. Of course, he was teasing the journalist. But it's how we define a good coach or a bad one. Is the guy who was able to change something because of a substitution or maybe have some luck. And luck is part of the game, too.
And how we define drama, right? We have no connection to either one of these clubs, right? It's not like Stevie, who's watching Liverpool and honestly cannot watch in the same room as us because he gets annoyed about everything.
Yeah.
We have no connection, zero connection. And we're watching this game, and both of us are sitting like this. Oh, my God! Oh, my God! Yeah. Oh, my God! Right?
Yeah. No. I was more manly.
Thank you, Dan. Look, I let my emotions flow, Dan. I'm not afraid of letting my emotions flow. But the point being that something like this, the only connection that we have is the love for this sport.
It's the drama.
Because it gives us something that you cannot, and Frank was just talking about a script. You cannot write it in a script. You can in your mind, maybe you can picture, you can think in maybe this way, maybe that way. Reality is much better. And when we can live it in moments like this, that's what makes it worthwhile.
As Jules mentioned, though, you take a look at the points total, and once again, it is massive. And once again, Liverpool so, so close to catching Manchester City at the top of the table. You take a look at the difference. Obviously, we saw last season a bit of an anomaly, but you take it back over the last four campaigns. 1 point separated them. Of course, this year, you go back to the 18-19 year as well. They won it in 2020. Luis, it is absolutely incredible how close these two teams have been over the last four seasons, considering, what's that, 38 times four, whatever that might be, how many matches are playing, but there's still so little to separate them.
Yeah, we are not talking that they are doing that consistently, not only in Premier League, but in every single competition. They've been finally in the FA Cups, finally in Carabao Cups, they've been finally in Champions Leagues, semi-finals, so the amount of games that these teams have been winning on the road for the last 5 years is just outstanding. I mean, we have to give so much credit for the both players, the both managers, and all the players involved, because definitely it's something that everybody was expecting from them, but we forget that they are Man United, they are Chelsea, they are Arsenal, they are Tottenham. They are teams that they are continue fighting, and they are tough, and the competition is very, very competitive. You can see that you can go away and lose and drop points against Watford or against Brighton. It doesn't matter, but if you want to be until the last game, like we've seen it once again this year, with options to win it, you have to have that consistency every single week in and week out. You cannot draw points. In the moment that you lose or draw a couple of games, you're out. You're out of the competition. And that's something very stressful, because in the midweek, you have the Champions League. The weekend, you have the Premier League. Then it comes the FA Cup, and you want to win every single trophy. That's something that in the beginning of the season, we saw Liverpool thinking about winning the quadruple, having the chance of winning almost something that no one has done it before in England. But at the end, because of that small margins of both of the teams, they cannot get it. They cannot have this Premier League. And of course, they are still having the chance of winning the Champions League. But I think we are enjoying one of the most amazing moments in Premier League, having these two teams fighting and racing until the last game winning the trophy. And well, we just have to enjoy it.
We talk about the drama, Frank, and we talk about the emotions from a Manchester City perspective. If you're a Liverpool player, is that level of disappointment maybe not quite as high considering what you've achieved this season and what you can still achieve, obviously, in the Champions League final? And in a way, you did your job today. You know, you beat Wolves. It was down to City. It was always going to be that way. Does that cushion the blow?
Well, I would say that it's a disappointment for the players, but they're professional players, and they can accept the fact that they were beaten by maybe a better team, let's say. But at the end of the day, they won the League Cup, they won the FA Cup. Within 6 days, they will have the Champions League final. So it's really quickly erased from your head to just think about the future and think what you can achieve. I mean, it's going to be a treble if they win the Champions League. So they won last year the Premier League. It's not like they are chasing the Premier League like they used to before they got that title last year. Now they can rest a little bit, compete against Manchester City, but if they don't get it, they can get something else. And if they get the Champions League again, you know, I mean, that's going to be something fantastic from the players. Everybody's going to remember that Liverpool won 3 silverware in 2021-22. So it's, again, a disappointment, but it goes away very quickly, I would say.
Let's take a look then at how things finish in the Premier League. City top by 1 point, Chelsea third. Of course, that was never going to change. As we wake our way down to some of the big storylines, it was all about who was going to finish fourth. Remember, Spurs had to not lose against Norwich, and they would take that fourth Champions League spot. They didn't lose. They won, in fact.
Oh, good job,
against
Ben.
Norwich. So Spurs seal the deal. And, of course, the big talking point when it comes to Spurs season is the difference that Antonio Conte has made since taking over, of course, appointed back in November. And since then, they've starkly improved. No question about it, in attack and indeed defence. And what that means is that Spurs are in the Champions League next season. Of course, last time they're in it, they made it all the way to the final. Jules, obviously, you can throw stats at things, but overall, Antonio Conte is the difference here, yeah?
Massively the difference maker. Of course, you can mention Kulusevski and Bentancourt, who arrived in January. You can mention Romero, who had a bumpy first half of the season, if you want, and much better after Conte. And the form of Heung-Min Son, which has been incredible, let's be honest here. Shared the golden boot with Mo Salah, but without taking penalties. For example, incredible, but I think the mastermind of all of this is Antonio Conte. And yeah, at times it was a rocky road. Remember the away game at Burnley when they lost, and he said, like, we thought he was going to quit. So I think he's been, even for him, we've talked a lot about roller coasters so far on the show. I think he's been a roller coaster for him. Today, he didn't want to confirm that he will be at the club next season in his post-match press conference, which is always interesting with him. He said, we'll have to sit down with the people at the club, Daniel Levy, etc., Paratici, and then see where we go. But it's not good when Conte doesn't commit really to anything. But let's see, because if you're Spurs, you would be crazy now to let him go. You would give him anything he wants, all the backing that he wants financially for him, for the recruitment, for the players that he doesn't want to use right now and that he wants to get rid of. But you would be crazy if you were Spurs to let him go after what he's just achieved in 7 months.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
drama at the bottom of the table as well. Burnley losing a home against Newcastle. Meanwhile, Leeds beating Brentford means that Jesse Marsh's side are safe. Burnley, Watford, Norwich down then to the Championship. Jules, blooming heck, this was tight.
Incredible. And I think a lot of people in England didn't believe they would do it, to be fair, because there was a bit of momentum, but certainly more momentum in Burnley's way. Remember that Wout Weghorst, massive chance in their midweek game that he didn't convert, that could have changed the whole thing. And instead, they go down today. Maybe they changed their manager too late. Maybe Leeds changed at the right time. Jesse Marsh did the job that he was employed to do, which is keeping them up. He's won four games in the league, I think. Three of them were in added time, which is incredible in itself. Again, we go back to City, Liverpool, but Leeds have stayed up by scoring goals in added time to win against Norwich, to win against Wolves, and then today, even if the draw would have been enough, to win away at Brentford. It's just an incredible story. Again, I don't know where Marcelo Bielsa is. I don't know if he's been watching or not, but he's also part of this. I mean, he didn't do everything great this season, but certainly he brought them back up into this league, and for them to stay for at least a third season, and Jesse Marsh to now have the chance to have a full pre-season, a full summer where he can bring the players that he wants, and then have a full go at it, is well deserved.
If Bielsa's watching, I hope for the sake of his knees, he's actually sat down, not just crouched in front of the TV again for 90 minutes. Meanwhile, already Leeds looking ahead to build for next season. Reports suggesting that Brendan Aaronson could be making the move from RB Salzburg, the US international, rumoured to be joining Leeds for $30 million. For a lot more on that and Jesse Marsh, I'm sure, be sure to check out the latest edition of Football Americas. That drops tomorrow here on ESPN Plus. Meanwhile, Milan are your champions in Italy. They avoided any sort of banana skin and managed to get the job done against Sassuolo. They beat their City rivals Inter by 2 points in the end. A massive sigh of relief, you imagine, from Juventus fans, for Milan fans, of course, winning their first title in 11 years. Jules, this, when you looked at it, if you're a Milan supporter, you were going into this match just thinking, we can't muck this up, can we? And fortunately, in the end for them, they didn't.
No, they didn't. And I think they settled their nerves pretty quickly. But it had happened before to Milan, to other clubs in Serie A, like in every other league, where you go to the last day of the season and you're ahead, and then you bottle it up. They didn't today. I think the experience at times of Olivier Giroud, the talent of Rafael Leao, who's been so clutch in the last few weeks of this season to carry, in a way, this Milan team, you know, to the line and across the line and carry that team to this first Scudetto in 11 years. It's a long time. There's a lot of similarities, actually, between the one they won in 2011 and the one they won this season. One, for example, is that their goal scorer didn't actually score many goals. It's 11 for Leao, it's 11 for Giroud, it's 8 for Ibra. But defensively, they were strong. They only lost twice, two games in a row, and that was back in November. Since the turn of the year, they've only lost once, and that was against Spezia in a very particular game because the referee made blunders and they should have never lost that game. But other than that, they were just invincibles. And at times, they play like champions. At times, they rode their luck a little bit. But Stefano Pioli has done an incredible job with a really young team. And on top of that young team and youth and energy and everything, you had the two very experienced heads of Zlatan Ibrahimovic, of course, and Olivier Giroud.
On that point, Jules, how much is this then the start of a new era for Milan?
It is, and to be fair, since Elliot took over and the arrival of Ivan Gazidis, for example, they've changed a lot of things. In the recruitment, they use those data wizards, if you want, to help them with the recruitment, and that has worked very well without spending too much money. Stefano Pioli could have been gone. Ralf Rangnick was very, very close, that close to taking over and be the big boss of that club. They stuck with Pioli, and now they get the rewards. It's as much about stability, which is a strange word in Milan, as the talent that they have and the recruitment that they did. But it's all that mix. And I think they were back in the Champions League this season. Not that it went well because they finished bottom of a really tough group. But that didn't really impact their season domestically because they were still very strong from start to finish, even if at times it looked like Napoli could win it, and I thought so certainly, that Inter were playing like champions, the champions from last season, and yet this Milan team never gave up and always believed. And that's what Ibra said in that interview we did with Gab. He said, I'm here to guide them because I've been here before. And Ibra was there in 2011, and now he's still there in 2022. And that's really the link between the last two titles.
Speaking of Gab, of course, a lot more on this on the latest edition of the Gab and Jules podcast. That will drop, I imagine, is going to be a big one as well tomorrow. Be sure to check it out. Well, also this weekend, Kylian Mbappe will be staying at PSG,
really?
Making
no.
his announcement. Mundo Deportivo saying that he stays. Meanwhile, AS saying it's his loss. Of course, Madrid race newspaper. Marca pushing it a little further. It takes class to play for Madrid.
A lot of class.
Frank, Luis and Jules, we're drawn to you, Jules, of course, because this is like Christmas, birthday, the whole shebang rolled into one, isn't it, for you?
It was a pretty spectacular day yesterday, I have to say. It made me work hard because we were, amongst others, not just us, but to break the story when we were told that it was happening, he was staying. And then we also had the story of Leonardo being sacked and Luis Campos arriving as a sporting director, which is a change that Kylian Mbappe wanted. And this is where we go down to, it's not just about the money here. And yeah, the money is huge. It's a huge 3-year deal with huge signing on fees and huge wages, over 50 million net a year. But the Real Madrid offer was really huge as well. What I think is fascinating is that Kylian Mbappe will be more than a player. He will take part in a lot of decisions like we've seen already. He extends his deal, Leonardo is sacked. And it's partly because Kylian Mbappe didn't want to work with Leonardo anymore. Kylian Mbappe wanted Luis Campos as a sporting director. Luis Campos would be appointed, it's been agreed today, tonight. He would be appointed very soon now. So this is now a new galaxy where players are more than just players on the pitch.
But this doesn't work, Jules. PSG have been the perfect example of this not working. We've heard managers come out and talk about this. Like, why do PSG think this is going to work this time? They're doubling on down on giving Mbappe the power to do everything.
It's a very good question. It's a good point. I guess time will tell. That's all we can say right now. We don't know if it's going to work, if it works, how well it would work, if it's not going to work at all, and if it doesn't work, if it's a full disaster or half a disaster, of course. We don't know yet. But you're right. I think they've been burned before, and yet they go again into the fire, and this time they give the keys and everything to one player. As good as he is and as young as he is, it's a big gamble. But we will have to see, I think. Politically, to start with, for Qatar, it was very important that Kylian Mbappe remained a PSG player for the World Cup in November. So I think they were ready, and we've said that many times on the show, they were ready to give and to give up anything for that to happen. I think in terms of marketing and in terms of the image of the club, having Kylian Mbappe, a Paris-born and bred kid, staying in the capital is also very important. And then sporting-wise, I don't know how you replace him if he leaves. I just don't know who you go to get. And again, we discussed that at length on the show. Where do you go next if Kylian Mbappe goes? So they sorted that by giving him basically anything he wanted.
Frank?
Well, there are many things that I want to say, because that's not the first time somebody holds the team and almost all the club. You know, let's talk about Leo Messi, for example. I think when he was at Barcelona, he was doing almost everything. I think Maradona, when he played for Naples, he was doing everything. Platini was selecting all the players he wanted for the national team. I'm pretty sure Beckenbauer was doing the same when he was playing for Bayern Munich. It's not the first time we see that. And that's... people are getting upset because Mbappe was in the middle of a negotiation like you normally do. And because he decided to not go to one of the biggest clubs, if it's not the biggest club in the world, people get upset and start insulting him. It's negotiation. He wants to write history for Paris. He's from Paris. So I don't understand people. You can be sad or happy if you're a Parisian fan or like me. You don't care, but just see that. And accept the decision of somebody. You don't have to sign for Real Madrid if you don't have everything you want. Saying that he signed for the money, That's untrue. As Jules said, you know, he would have gotten 100 million signing for Real Madrid. That's not money. That's what? That's just coins? No, that's a lot of money. So I think it goes everywhere where we try to find why and how come Kylian Mbappe didn't sign for Real Madrid. But, you know, he wants to write something. He wants to have some decision. He thinks that he can change something. And people don't know the future. Nobody can write the future. Nobody can guess the future. We don't know what's going to happen next season with Madrid. I don't know if Benzema will do miracles like he did this season. And we don't know if Paris will find something special, will make that being successful in Europe. But I think you just have to accept the decision of that guy. And if he has to design, it's maybe better than what we saw before. So maybe he's clever enough to do better than Leonardo. And we'll see. We'll see what the future is.
If he was happy in PSG and if he wanted to write his name as a legend at the club and he wanted to help them get success in the Champions League, why even let it get to this stage? Why even bother, Frank? Why not sign that contract earlier, get it done and move on with your lives? Why all this flirting with Real Madrid? It's got to be money, hasn't it? He's used Real Madrid as a tool to get as much money as possible. And there's no problem with that. No problem whatsoever. But the fact that you're saying, look, he wants to be at PSG, he wants to cement and do something special at the club, what, that's just suddenly, he just suddenly decided that? Then why even talk to somebody else?
But because it's called a negotiation.
So I mean, he used Real Madrid.
Like everybody
Real Madrid
in the world.
Was just a pawn in all of this.
No, why do you say use? No, he didn't use them. He listened to them and he didn't agree with them. That's it. Maybe he didn't have what. No. You listen to them, and with all due respect, like he said in his he made a statement about that. A public statement that he didn't use them. He listened to them. He's going to support Real Madrid next Saturday against Liverpool.
Oh, great.
But he has something in his heart. Listen, in his heart, it's Paris Saint-Germain. Money-wise, of course, it will count. Of course, it will count. You know, but he doesn't know what's going on, what's going to happen to Real Madrid next season as well. It's going to be only one of them at Real Madrid, where he's going to be the star, where he's going to have a decision to make, like Leo Messi did, like I explained before. It's just that. And it's already settled. It's a big challenge. Who knows what Mbappe is going to do at Real Madrid? He's already settled. He signed, he said he stays, and he scored 3 goals. The guy feels at home. He's the king of the world in Paris Saint-Germain. And he scored so many goals this season on top of giving assists. So nobody should criticize him in that way. And again, it's a negotiation. When you sell your house, and you because it's a friend, you're not going to listen to somebody who's going to offer you the double. You're stupid if you don't do that.
So he's chose the comfortable option.
And he's not using the other one.
Has he chosen the comfortable option, Frank, instead of going for the challenge?
Of course, in a way that is already he knows the thing. He feels nice and he does what he has to do. Again, he was the man. At the beginning of the season, remember, when Messi came, he was booed by the fans. Remember that. He was booed. And he changed everything, working hard and being the king of it and erasing the others. And he signs for Paris, score a hat trick. He's going to be the king. You don't want to be the king. Imagine, I don't. It's very strange the way we try to analyze that. And I just want to say something. Stop insulting people when you don't know. First, we don't know the numbers. We don't exactly know the numbers. And we all know that Real Madrid would have offered him like crazy money. It's not an easy decision to make. As he said, his dream when he was young was to sign for Real Madrid. But he feels good at Paris. He feels that there is an ambition and they want to do something. Like Manchester City. Like, I'm not sure De Bruyne wants to leave Manchester City to go to Real Madrid. I don't know if it's the possibility. I'm not sure. Because at the point you feel that you can get something out of the club that you signed for.
All I would say to PSG, going back to the very initial question and handing all the keys and all the power to the city and the club to Kylian Mbappe, is you better have done your homework in terms of the character of this individual. Because the last time you handed the keys to somebody, it was Neymar. Neymar was supposed to be the guy. And in handing him the keys, making him the king, as Frank has defined the position, this club went in all sorts of different directions. And so when then, as the first move that you make to satisfy the needs and wants of Kylian Mbappe is that you get rid of the sporting director and you bring the one that he wants, you're already putting yourself in a position in which he's making decisions, where he now becomes more important than the others. And whether we're not naive enough to deny the fact that in a team there are some players that are more important than others. We know this. We understand this. But when you actually confirm it with the moves that you're making and the decisions that you're making, now you are exposing yourself to the will and wants of an individual who today may be the greatest guy in the world, but tomorrow, because of this newly acquired power, may become a nightmare. That's all I would say. You better be careful as to who you're handing the power to.
Jules and Frank are in London, so I can say this to you, Luis. Isn't it slightly disappointed that we've got arguably the best player in the world not playing in one of the best leagues in the world?
Yeah, it is. It is. I'm a bit disappointed. It's true that even though he was going to Real Madrid, and I'm not a big fan of the team, even though that I know that he's one of the best in the history of this game, we want to see Kylian Mbappe in one of the toughest leagues in the world, and of course winning maybe, why not, a Champions League, competing for the highest trophy. Here in Madrid, I can tell you that everybody's disappointed, very deeply disappointed because of the manners, I think, because he's been making that, yeah, I'm going to take the decision, yeah, very soon, yeah, I'm going to wait. And yes, the week before the Champions League final is going to be played, where Real Madrid is involved, he's going to make the decision. He's taking all that spotlight, all that momentum of this Real Madrid, and everybody's talking. No one is talking about the Champions League final here in Madrid. No one is talking in Spain about. Everybody's talking about why Kylian Mbappe decided to stay in Paris Saint-Germain. I think that's why everybody's hurt here in Spain, because everybody was expecting him to come to Real Madrid and start his career, not being the king of Paris or being the king in France, being the king in the world, becoming the most important player in the world, not in Paris or in France. And that's why everybody is angry. But I have to say, he's a player who is trying to build his own legacy. And if he wants to do it in Paris, he wanted to become the best Paris Saint-Germain player of the history, winning trophies for the team and for his hometown and for his people, we have to understand that. And we have to understand that he wants to be that. But I totally agree with Ali. It's a very thin line, that one, to give so much importance, because he's going to be surrounded by so many egos, so many important players, so many important characters. And when the things are going well, everybody's pushing in the right direction. But if the things are not going well, we'll see where this everything ends.
So Pochettino is out. Who's coming in to manage, Jules?
This is the question now, because it's, I think, a matter of days that before they tell Pochettino that it won't be the next season. Although there's also a possibility that if they don't find a suitable replacement, because I think I overheard Frank talking about Zidane, I think it would be very hard to convince Zinedine now to come over. I think they like Christophe Galtier, the Nice manager, who is French, who has worked with Luis Campos and worked really well with him before. But again, this is a difficult one, because he's at Nice and they've got a good project there, and there was a bit of a politics at Nice, and he's won that kind of battle, Galtier. So I'm not really sure why he would leave, even if it's PSG. So then you go to the next name on the list, and I think Pochettino might still be better than the next name on the list, if you see what I mean. So let's see what happens there. But ideally, they would want Zidane in and not Pochettino. But again, I think Zidane might be too difficult to do. So it would have to be someone else. It'd be very interesting. And again, to go back to the point that we were making before, Kylian Mbappe will have a big say on who comes next as a manager.
Zidane, Frank, tell me.
Well, you know, no, I think it's... Well, I heard it on television. I thought it was a statement, in fact, that he wouldn't come. And I have that. The guy is a kid of Marseille. I mean, you. It's like asking, I don't know, Sergio Ramos one day to be the coach of Barcelona or Piqué to be the coach of Real Madrid. I mean, it's like that, you know, and Luis can say that it's impossible. So it's why I say that. You know, if there is a coach that I see coming, because we talked about him before and what he did with Spurs, it's Conte. Conte might come to Paris, and Conte knows how to deal with big stars. And he knows how to buy big stars.
But Frank, why would Conte come when he knows that if Mbappe isn't happy with something he's doing, Mbappe's just going to go upstairs and start crying to mummy and daddy who have promised him the keys to the car? If you're Conte, you don't want to walk into that. You don't walk into a place where Mbappe's got all the power, surely.
No, again. I'm sorry, Dan. I think you are overestimating the power of Mbappe when he says that he will have a word to say. He doesn't say he will have to decide for everything. He's not going to take the shit in a bit before the game, say, you play and you don't play, and we're going to buy that one or not. No. They're going to say, well, we want to buy that one. We just want to tell you. And again, it was the same for Messi. And I guess it was the same for many other players in the world where they say, you know, we want to sign him. Have you heard something bad about him or not? That's the only question they're going to ask him. He's not going to decide for everything. It's just a way to say it. And Conte can deal with that. I'm sure. I don't know. I don't have a big example of players, but with big coaches, you know, coming to a club and dealing with these big players. It happened so many times, and it worked. It worked. Ancelotti came and worked with Benzema. And Benzema is a king of Real Madrid. And he had no problem whatsoever with him.
Yes, but Ancelotti is very different to Conte.
When he signed a player,
you see a Conte side with Messi, Neymar and Mbappe. And everyone working hard the way that Conte wants.
Well, you never know. You know, sometimes miracle happens in football, and maybe they learn their lessons. You know, maybe they will have to start working a little bit. You know, and Mbappe, and Neymar, Messi, and Mbappe will have to work a little bit, even defensively. You know, again, I believe in human being. You know, you don't like human being. You make a statement, and you think people are bad, and they keep being bad. No, I think they can evolve.
Hey, I think Conte would need another hair transplant if he goes to PSG, because he can pull it all out.
What?
Luis,
what are you saying?
From a manager's perspective, how much would you be hesitant to take this job, despite the fact it's PSG and despite the talent you're working with, knowing that environment you're going into?
No, I think that the top managers are used to this kind of situation, and of course, if I would be in that position, I would straight away go and take it. I mean, you're going to be surrounded with a lot of money to spend on a build that a project. If they give you time to kind of use it and work with so much talent, you're going to have so many opportunities of winning the La Liga, the Liga in France, of course, to compete in Champions League. That is the main target for this team for next season. So I'm sure that even though we think that the personality and the character of the players is something that you have to handle well, and not everybody is ready to do it, I think that they are manager there who can go ahead and, of course, take that that position, because definitely one of those special teams that if you have a chance once, you're going to go for it.
Final question to you, Jules. Will Kylian Mbappe ever play for Real Madrid?
Oh.
Yeah, that's been fascinating to see the reaction and clearly the club briefing. This is over. Never again we will go for him. Never we will try to sign him again. He will never play here, never wear the shirt. Let's see. Let's see if in 2 years' time, when Kylian Mbappe is still only 25 years old, because Rana is only 23, and he says, hey, maybe we can make this happen now. Let's see the reaction. A lot of things can change in football very quickly, as we all know. So right now, I can understand the anger and the frustration and the disappointment from the Madrid side of things, of course. And if they feel used, I can understand it completely. But in 2 years' time, if Kylian Mbappe has achieved what he wanted to achieve in Paris and he wants the next chapter and he is the best player in the world and he's won Ballon d'Ors already and he says, you can have me, I'm happy to come, it won't cost you much, should we do this? I'd be curious to see what Florentino Perez, if he's still in charge, by the way, and the people at the club decide to do.
We'll say goodbye to Luis, by the way, doing his coaching badge at PSG. Oh. So he's made himself available, make that clear.
Great choice. Great pick.
Better hair than Conte.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Yep.
We'll say thank you to Luis. Meanwhile, Frank and Jules will be back for Extra Time, which, as always, you can check out over on our YouTube channel.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
At the start of the day, there were three teams looking to avoid relegation. Granada were favourites to stay up. However, victories for Cadiz and Mallorca meant that that 0-0 draw against Espanyol proved decisive for Granada. They are relegated and will play in La Segunda next season. Well, for more on this, let's welcome Sid Lowe, who was at Pamplona for the Osasuna Mallorca game. But the big story really did develop in Granada, didn't it, Sid? Not many at the start of today would have thought it'd be they who would be going down.
No, exactly. And for lots of very good reasons. They were the team that were in the best possible position in terms of they had more points than the others. They needed more things to happen for them to go down than the other two teams did. They were the only one of the three teams playing at home. They're the team, by the way, who beat Mallorca 6-2 just 2 weeks ago. A team that had improved enormously under Aitor Karanka. They'd only been beaten once in his five games in charge. They'd obviously started that with a draw at Atletico Madrid. They picked up a couple of really important wins. And that conversation we were having at the start of the afternoon, when we were talking about one very basic fact that we have to take into account when we talk about relegation games, which is that the teams are not that good. There's a reason why they're in a relegation battle. And to be honest, Granada are the best of the three teams, or at least we thought they were. Best of the three teams in terms of the quality of the players they've got, in terms of the kind of chances they can create, in terms of the variety of what they have going for them. And they also seem to be the team with the best mindset. And Karanka himself had said, look, I took over a team that was anxious, but we've got confidence now. We're playing now. We feel like we're in control now. And of course, today, it didn't happen.
Poor Jorge Molina, he said.
Yeah, and he's a player I admire enormously as well. You know, this is a guy that's 40 now. It's a guy who's prolonged his career playing fantastically well. He may not be quick, but he looks after himself very, very well indeed. He scored a lot of really important goals, and for it to be him, although actually his penalty-taking record is really poor, correct me if I'm wrong, I think it's 7 of the last 15 penalties I think he's failed to score from. And for it to be him, of all people, I think is pretty sad. That said, I suppose whenever there's a missed penalty, it always feels unfair, doesn't it? It always feels cruel. And then, of course, add to the fact that they hit the post right near the very end.
Meanwhile, Sid, of course, you've been with the Mallorca team today. I imagine just a massive sigh of relief from them and Javier Aguirre.
Absolutely. I quite enjoyed speaking to Marici after the game. And of course, he's made a real impact here at Mallorca. He came in the winter window. He scored 5 goals, but he gives them something. He basically wins absolutely everything in the air. Anyway, I said to him, look, you know, what's it like in the dressing room? And he said, please don't ask me that. I can't tell you that. It's dirty in there. Everyone was jumping up and down. Everyone was celebrating. There was a real release when they scored the second goal. When they scored the first, obviously there was. But when they scored the second, I think they knew they were safe. Now, he was saying, Marici after the game, look, you're never really safe until it's actually over. But at that point, you know, I think they felt that they were in a very good position. Aguirre's been under a huge amount of pressure. They haven't actually played particularly well. They scored in the 92nd minute against Rayo Vallecano last week. That was them down had they not scored that. That put things back in their own hands, which is, of course, why they've survived this week. Again, as we were saying about Granada, but turn it on its head, this is a team that got beaten 6-2 just 2 weeks ago that seemed to be completely gone, and today they reacted. I thought their second half today, by the way, was very, very good indeed. For a team that in the first half I thought had looked nervous, had looked fearful, the second half was really impressive. And the staff, the president of the club, all the directors, all of them have been talking about post-game, and you know, both on and off the record in the tunnel, greeting each other, talking about that sense of relief, because at half-time they really didn't think that this looked very good.
Rightly so, though. At the start of the day, it was Cadiz who were favourites to go down. You felt that massive moment, that Negredo penalty might prove to be decisive. But fair play, as this game went on against Espanyol, they got better and better. And they against Alaves, sorry, they got better and better, and they got the job done. And Cadiz are safe.
Yeah, and as you say, it was a case of the game going on, wasn't it? Because they didn't start particularly well. Alaves caused a few problems for them, which we weren't necessarily expecting. Bear in mind that I think even the Alaves fans really wanted Cadiz to survive, given that they're already down. Alaves fans this week, by the way, had basically used their season tickets to give Cadiz fans tickets, because Alaves had put the prices really high to try and prevent the ground being just full of Cadiz fans. Alaves' fans were annoyed enough at their team for going down. Said, well, look, come on, don't do this to another set of fans. All right, we'll get their season ticket. We'll use our season ticket to get them tickets at members' prices to get them in, around about 1,000 Cadiz fans. And Cadiz, I thought, it took them a while to get going, but in the second half they played very well. They've really changed, by the way, since Sergio took over as manager. They were a tough defensive team, but they drew too many games. They didn't win often enough, and what he's done is release them a bit. Now, I'm not going to claim that they're suddenly Pelé's Brazil. They're absolutely not, but they have at least started attacking teams, and in the end, I think that's what's paid off.
Sid Lowe, as always, thank you very much.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Stay tuned. Extra Time is next. Jules and Frank back with us. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you, as always, for your tweets. Ali Moreno with us here in the studio. Jules and Frank join us as well. Frank, did you call me a bad person again on the show today?
I think so.
This is becoming too much.
Why would you say that?
Well, because we were talking about Mbappe and you said I was a bad person.
You are a bad person.
For doubting him.
You are a bad person. Everybody knows that, you know. You don't believe in human being, you know. You make statements. You think people are bad and for once, and you don't change your mind. People can change and be better persons, you know. Even yourself can be a better person one day. We're still waiting, but it might come up. I love you, Dan. You know that.
I wasn't critical of Mbappe. I was suggesting that maybe
like
money was a bigger influence than you were suggesting. That was all.
No, okay. Okay, but I want to say to the audience that we love each other and we love to tease each other because you're English and I'm French and we can't stand each other.
Right.
Only Jules can live in London, but
Jules, you've had quite the weekend, really. The Mbappe news going up to Manchester for the final day of the season. Goodness me. Do you think Gab will let you talk a little more tomorrow on the podcast?
No. He's on good form lately as well, so there's even more. Like, he's got so many things. Since the end of the season, he's got even more to say.
Of course.
It was a very, very special weekend, to be fair, between the news that broke yesterday and today going to City and be part of that experience. I mean, I didn't care who won the title. I didn't mind if it was Liverpool or City. But seeing all those fans that the Etihad, like we mentioned on the show, was really incredible to be part of that day.
Joel, just out of interest, just from a journalist's perspective, take us through the Mbappe timeline. When did you get an inkling? When did sources start to confirm? When could you go public with it?
Yeah, it was quite fascinating on Saturday because early afternoon, really, we started getting a few messages and phone calls about something is happening. And remember, we said on the Tuesday that PSG were really pessimistic by then that he would stay, that they felt, and maybe it was them bluffing and bluffing us and the way they were briefing us, but they felt like this is not good. And on the other hand, Real Madrid were really confident. And then it kind of went quiet, and then neither of those clubs were like, oh, where is he going to go? Didn't really know. And then on Saturday, early afternoon, we started getting the news. So it's those big email threads with all the bosses in Bristol. What do we do now? Do we go now? There was Rodri, obviously, and Alex Kirkland involved in Madrid as well for the Madrid side. By then, I was convinced from the PSG sources that he was staying. They were obviously over the moon, so it's easy in that case to get the information. And then my daughter was like, take me to the park, take me to the park. So we basically wrote it all between the house and the park, slide and the swing. It was a crazy afternoon.
Frank, what would you have done? Not taking the daughter to the park. Would you have gone to PSG, to Real Madrid, or stayed at PSG?
I think, like I thought, at the end of the day, even if I had a, you know, I put myself in a position where I think I wanted him to stay in Paris Saint-Germain, for myself, I would have gone for a new challenge.
Right.
I think there is a cycle of 5 years in football, and it's what I did. I left Strasbourg after 5 years, I left Chelsea after 5 years. And talking to others, to other players, I think there is a cycle when you need something else and other challenges, other goals and everything. And that's his decision again. And I don't want to criticize, or I don't really care in a way. But I, personally, I would have tried. I would have tried something else. So maybe, but it's my feeling.
Are these Mbappe-approved questions?
I don't know if we spoke to Mbappe if he approves of this. Okay.
Want to make sure that...
Away from Mbappe, I think this is out for the oldest member of the panel, so we're going to Frank. Uh-huh. Back before cell phones and widespread internet access, how did the players, coaches, media and fans keep track of scores for other matches on final match day? Was there TV showing other matches in the locker room, on the bench or in the media room, Frank?
At my time or nowadays?
No, we know nowadays. We all live in nowadays. Back in your day.
Or back in my days? I don't know. I think we didn't have, well, we had a little bit of cell phones, but not
radio.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
But in the 90s, I think they were listening to radio.
Yes.
I think they were listening to radio, and everybody had a radio with the
thing
antenna. There, you know, listening like that. And the antenna, that was pretty fun, and they were listening to a reporter saying goal or not, you know. That was the only way, I guess.
It's a good question. Mm-hmm. And if you were playing for the title, top four, relegation on the last day of the season, mm-hmm. would you rather play at home or away? Would the nerves be too much playing at home, or would the crowd push your team to get the result you need?
I understand the premise of the question.
Yeah.
I'd rather play at home.
Right.
Because this is framing the question from a negative point of view.
Yes.
You're already suggesting that the pressure is going to be too much. Well, how about you turn around and you said the support is what's going to take us through.
The nerves at City today, you could taste it, couldn't you?
Well, you could.
Yeah.
But you could taste the nerves because of how poorly they were playing.
Right.
Had they shown up and been dominant from the very first minute and scored a goal 5-10 minutes into the match, then that crowd gets behind you and there's no chance Villa's ever coming back. I'd rather have the possibility of controlling what's around me, and I can do that better at home than I would on the road.
Frank?
I totally agree with Ali. I think you have to see the bottle half full instead of seeing the bottle half empty. I think the crowd can help you big time, especially if you concede a goal. You know, they're going to cheer you up and they're going to help you to come back into the game. So, yeah, definitely at home.
For Ali, who should Real Madrid look to sign in general this summer now that they're all that Mbappe money to spend?
Well, I tend to believe, and I may be in the minority, that if you are Real Madrid, you don't drown in the sorrows of being left at the altar by Kylian Mbappe. You actually go out and party hard.
Right.
Go and find.
So who are the bridesmaids?
Well, I don't know. But if you can find good bridesmaids, if you
Ani
can,
Moreno.
if you can find players at a, obviously in comparison would be at a budget price.
Right. So let me throw some names. Lewandowski.
No, you don't need Lewandowski.
Paul Pogba.
No, you have Benzema.
No. Paul Pogba. Yeah, under the right circumstances.
Mo Salah.
Yeah, sure.
Sadio Mane.
Yes, as well. I mean, if these are players that are actually available to you, then yes. But you're not addressing some of the issues that you have.
Right.
You know, you got to address the left back position. You got to address the right back position. You have to address depth in the midfield. You're assuming that Valverde and Camavinga are going to be the answer long term, but you're still missing a Modric type sort of player, a guy that can work the underneath spaces and can find a pass. You don't have that. You have a lot of talent in the front third, right, with Rodrigo, Benzema, and Vinicius. Maybe you find an alternative to Benzema when he's injured or when he's not available or when you want to give him some time off. That is not Luka Jovic or the other alternative that they have had available to them. So there are things that you can do to strengthen your team, to make you a better team, a deeper squad than what you were this year.
This is from Frank's restaurant shorts. Frank's, we've got a heat wave here. I ate in a restaurant with shorts on, wow, in your honor, wow, this week, and it was lovely. Much needed. Much needed air on the legs, Frank. I don't know why you would deny me that.
I'm sure.
Could we see a rift between...
Fassi on top of it.
Could we see a rift between Benzema and Mbappe because of the transfer saga? Could France's World Cup hopes be in danger with this, ooh, and pre-existing drama?
Well, hopefully not first, and I don't think so. I think Karim knows the difficulty that it can be for players to leave a club and to come to another one, and it's none of his business in a way. And as Ali mentioned, I think now we can say it. It's of course a priority to sign a fantastic player, and when you have the possibility to sign Mbappe, you want to go for it. But without watching Real Madrid this season, we all know that it's not offensively that they have to strengthen their team. And if they want, they are ready to play, to put 100 million in Mbappe's pocket, you know, you can buy two or three players to fulfill maybe in the defense department or a little bit in the midfield zone as well, instead of getting an offensive, very expensive player. But I don't think, to going back to the question, that's going to be an issue. I think Mbappe will explain what happened and how it happened, and Benzema will carry on, you know, what he does the best for Real Madrid.
What did you make of the Benzema Instagram post, Jules?
Yeah, I thought it was an interesting one, wasn't it? The Tupac photo with his mate who betrayed him behind. In the background, you could see the face. There's a few people who are quite close to Karim who said that it was not the intention that he had. It came from another account. I don't know. I would want to believe that this is part of football as well. Okay, those kind of transfer sagas and this kind of twist don't happen every day. I give you that. But it happens sometimes where you think you've signed the players, you're excited to play with someone, and then in the end it doesn't come. It's happened many, many times before. Not to this magnitude, not with those clubs, and not with a player like Mbappe, maybe. But this has happened before. Karim Benzema knows this is not Care Bear world. He knows how football is brutal at times, and this is part of it. So I would want to think that it won't be bad. There won't be bad blood between them. They were good friends before. I think they were looking forward to playing with each other at club level. If the move had happened, it didn't. And I would trust in Deschamps to make sure that there's no hard feelings between the two.
Care Bear. Do Care Bear still exist, Jules? You have a little girl. Does she like Care Bears?
Yeah, we have a few.
Really?
You know, in French, it's Bisounours.
Pardon?
Yeah, bisounours in French, which is bisounours, like bisou for kisses. Oh. And nours for like nounours, teddy bears. So yeah, it's really cute.
That's very nice. Oh. My Josh isn't quite into care bears.
What about bisounours?
You've got boys down, so I knew Ali as well. So you don't know.
That's all I get. Yeah. Shot as I walk through the door. Who is more excited right now? Pablo and Nadim, because of Campiones.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We know Nadim is on holiday in Italy, isn't he? It's his anniversary at the moment. Mm-hmm. Pablo quite excited, I imagine. Or Jules, because of Mbappe.
That's easy. That's easy.
It's a personal bond here.
Come on. Or Frank, because Mbappe didn't go to Real Madrid, and we know Frank hates Real Madrid, and they're just a lucky team.
Why does he hate Real Madrid?
Well, because, I don't know, he's just got this thing.
Wow.
World Cup champion, Frank Le Bouff.
It's crazy because, I almost signed for Real Madrid in 98 and when John Toshak was the coach. And, Chelsea put a crazy price on me and I was too old. And I didn't sign for them for many reasons. I love that club. I really respect that club. I just say, I don't know, I like when you do that. But I really think that the way they play today doesn't allow me to say that they are a fantastic team.
They're a winning team, Frank.
In terms of spirit. Yes, of course, they're a winning team. Okay, they're fantastic. You know, us all specialists in the world, all talent, if they play well, ask them if they play with Madrid play well. Even Camavinga, I followed something today on the French television. Camavinga say, "I can't believe what we were able to do in Santiago Bernabeu in return games. I couldn't believe, you know." Even them, they don't believe what happened. But it's not because of the way they play; it's because of the way they believe in football. So credit for that. Not credit for the football.
But we just said Jules telling us at Riyad Mahrez is exactly that after the Manchester City win today, that he couldn't believe what happened.
Yeah, well, what can I say? You know, sometimes football is made like that. But overall, you want to see the better team win, you know? And again, I don't care. I'm happy if they win the championship. Well, it's not I'm happy. I don't care. And I will say, well done, Real Madrid. Right. Your spirit is fantastic. The way you play is not, but the spirit is fantastic.
Isn't Frank spearheading our coverage?
Yeah, the Champions League.
The Champions League.
Yeah.
He's hosting people because it's in Paris.
Yes.
And he's leading the coverage. There's going to be a lot of bias in this coverage. Yeah,
exactly. Oh, Frank. I wish I was coming. It'd be lovely. Frank in Paris.
Eating in shorts everywhere.
Oh, shorts.
Oh, yeah.
Down the Champs-Élysées.
Yes.
Oh, beautiful. We talked about this on the show, didn't we?
I have a dinner plan with... Yeah. I have a dinner plans with Alexis Nunez.
Right.
And Luis Moran.
Yes.
We'll have a dinner Tuesday night.
Okay.
And I see Jules on Thursday because we're going to do the show on Thursday live from Paris.
Right.
And Saturday we'll be at the stadium. So you're going to see a lot of Frank next week.
Wow, a lot of negativity towards Real Madrid.
Wow.
That'd be nice. And we talked about this on the show, chances of Zidane taking the PSG job. Frank, are you saying none, zero, not happening, ever?
Well, I might have made a mistake or a misunderstanding where this afternoon it was on TV and I thought it was a statement from the press, from some journalist saying that Zidane is not coming. So I guess I took it for granted and it's what I said. I don't believe it's possible. Nothing is impossible. And that's a French saying. But again, as I said before, I don't see Piqué being the coach of Madrid one day, like I don't see Sergio Ramos being the coach of Barcelona. I feel the same for Zidane. Well, never say never. We'll see.
By the way, nothing is impossible. It's not a French saying. It's not specific to France. We say the same thing in Spanish.
No, that's French. Jules, Explain to Ali that we say that in France. You speak English better than me.
I don't think you've got a copyright on it.
Yeah, apparently. Nada impossible. We can't say that.
No. It's like the Let's Get Ready to Rumble man.
Yeah. Oh, I can't say it.
No, what?
Oh, no.
It's going to cost you money.
That's it. We're done. Okay. Now we've gone all this. Now we have to go quite serious to the final question.
Here we go.
Yay or nay for fan pitch invasions? This, of course, has been a big talking point over the last week. Jules, what do you think?
It's a big no for me. I've said it on the show with Gab before. I don't understand it. I don't understand why you would want to do it. I mean, yeah, maybe if your dream is to walk on a piece of grass, albeit in the stadium of the team you support, maybe, but it's dangerous. They're crazy people. A lot of them are drunk on the pitch. We saw the incident with Patrick Vieira. We saw the incident today with Olsen. We saw the incident with Billy Sharp the other day in the championship as well. Now it's going out of hands. And today, trust me, there was a lot of stewards, there was the police, and the stewards cannot engage with the fans anyway. So they're there, and they've got those bright jackets, yellow or orange, but they can't do anything. So I'm not really sure actually why they're there, because the fans don't care. I mean, they broke the goal at the Etihad. I mean, come on, what world is this? Like, I know they were happy. You can be happy in the stands. You don't need to be happy on the grass. So it's a huge no for me.
I think my son was on the Manchester City pitch today. That's nothing to do with bad parenting. Frank?
An absolute no for me. I saw Zinchenko completely squeezed, by the people from the security. I mean, you want to enjoy with the fans, but not that way, because it's impossible. People get overwhelmed. And they pull your shirt. I remember in Italy seeing players finishing only with their underwear. You know that they had some fresh air, like you when you were in the restaurant with your shorts. You know, but you don't want to be put naked because the fans want everything from you. So it's not a good party. They have to escape from the pitch. And to only party in the dressing room, that's insane for me.
It's a definite nay. However, if you do allow it, and something happens like it did with Patrick Vieira, and then this fan who's harassing Patrick Vieira gets his rear end handed back to him, then that's on him. You came looking for something, you got your backside whooped, that's on you. Let's not blame Patrick Vieira for it.
No.
You're fair game. You're on the field. If I feel threatened as a player, then let's go. But don't blame me if it doesn't end well for you.
That is it then. That brings us to the end of ESPN FC. As Frank mentioned, there'll be a lot of talk about the Champions League final, and whether you like it or not, a lot of Frank, baby. What? You can join us throughout the week.
Yep.
Sorry, guys. Sorry.
Yes. Je suis désolé.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
Throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.